Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder why a loving God would allow innocent people to have their houses wrecked and their lives wrecked in a hurricane. Well, that's a good question, my friend. We know that God originally created the world as a paradise. It was after people turned away from God that life became a challenge in the way nature behaves, and even more, of course, in the way people behave. I do know this. When one suffers, we should not pour salt in the wound. As if the people on the East Coast aren't suffering enough, already we're hearing the brilliant pundits talk about global warming. Message for the East Coast: now that you lost your home, consider this. The hurricane may not have happened if you didn't drive your car as much or use so much electrical energy. Of course, that message is not merely for the East Coast, but all of us. You see, hurricanes never existed until the phrase global warming was coined. Well, it feels like Super Bowl Sunday for me, not because of football, but because that too is a Sunday when I do my radio show and wonder if anybody is listening right now, even as I speak. And we can see the TVs here in the studio, although we can't hear them right now, even as I speak. The second presidential debate is airing on TV. Somebody probably didn't know that. What? Jumping Jiminy, turn off Siegel, turn on the debate. I did seriously consider airing a repeat and not even coming in to do a live show. I want to watch the debate myself. I will watch it, record it at home. Obviously, anybody who follows my program for my political views is going to be watching the debate right now instead of listening to me. So why the live show? Because politics is not all we do. I also discuss the arts. I also discuss theology. In fact, I had promised last week to wrap up a series today, the third in a series where we answer the question, why does a loving God allow evil and suffering in the world? And so many in my audience do not follow politics and may in fact be listening to the radio right now instead of watching the debate. And even for those in my audience who do follow politics, they can still listen to this program later after it's posted to my website. And so knowing that even my political commentary will not fall on deaf ears, that eventually all of my interested listeners will hear. Let me talk a little bit about the election before returning to our series on God and suffering. I already made my debate predictions last week. The so-called town hall will be stacked against Trump. An overweight woman will ask him why he has a problem with overweight people. An illegal immigrant will stand and identify himself or herself, not as an illegal immigrant, mind you, but an undocumented worker, asking why Trump wants to deport them and break up families. Hillary will be pitched softballs, even though Licky Weeks put forth yet another bombshell, well, many bombshells, including an email where she admits that she wants completely open borders, another email where she admits that the positions she holds publicly and the positions she holds privately are not the same positions. Now, that's no big surprise, but to hear that in her own words. However, as you know, by an amazing, incredible coincidence, a tape about Donald Trump has also leaked this weekend, probably to take our minds off of Hillary's culpability, and it's working. The mainstream media is talking about some lewd braggadocio put forth by Trump over 10 years ago and picked up in recording. There's nothing new about this. This is stuff we've known about Trump for years. How many times has he been on the Howard Stern show? And he's admitted this, and he's confessed it, and he's apologized. What's new is actually hearing it. hearing the words themselves, and they do sound disgusting, but you are barely hearing a word about Hillary. And already, several, in fact, many of our brave Republican politicians have jumped ship, probably out of a fear for their own reelections. Some have taken back their endorsements of Trump. Some have even called for him to drop out of the race. Brave, brave men. They really deserve your votes. We have become such a politically correct culture that we react more to somebody's unfiltered mouth than a candidate with downright repetitive criminal activity. That is the heritage of the PC movement. We grow numb to evil, but extremely sensitive to words. Very sad time for our country. We are losing our freedoms under this president, and it will continue under his successor. How many people realize that 1 week ago, Obama handed over control of the internet to the corrupt United Nations? Probably very few of you even knew that. But everyone a week ago knew about Trump and the Miss Universe woman. Wake up, America. I don't like a lot of the comments Trump makes either, but for crying out loud, let's have some perspective. People have died under Hillary's watch. In 2008, when she ran against Barack Obama, she made a campaign commercial about the ones who trust to be there in the middle of the night when that national emergency phone call comes in. Well, it came in from Benghazi when she was Secretary of State. Those who dialed probably got a recorded message saying, "Your call is important to us. Please stay on the line." That should be enough without even mentioning the Clinton Foundation, the email scandals. But oh, the way Trump talks, this is what concerns people. If we elect Hillary, we deserve Hillary just as we deserved Obama. Make no mistake. And after the Supreme Court appointees, we will no longer be a republic. Already, judges are telling states that they cannot ask for voter ID, even though, incidentally, you need an ID to get into a courtroom. And that's only the beginning. Once we lose the Supreme Court, we will be ruled by a combination of executive orders and oligarchy, which canonize the executive orders. It will be virtually impossible for Republicans to ever gain power again. Those of you refusing to vote for Trump in order to keep the Republican Party pure might want to think about this. He may not be the most conservative candidate, but if Hillary wins, you will own the result. It just won't matter anymore how pure the Republicans are, because the Republic itself will no longer exist. If you just joined us, this is Bob Siegel, unable to comment on tonight's debate because it's going on right while I speak. But I'll tell you what, let me give you my opinion of last week's vice presidential debate. Just a handful of words out of Pence's mouth and Kane immediately jumps in to interrupt, in the fine tradition of Joe Biden's swinish behavior during the last VP debate. Pence listened without interrupting to Kane, who went first. Why couldn't the same courtesy have been extended? And where was the moderator? Why don't these moderators quit debating the opponents and actually moderate? I was so angry and so frustrated, but I must admit, I thought the spin the next day would praise Kane for being in control and putting his opponent on the defensive. Much to my pleasant surprise, almost everybody else was disgusted by Kane's performance too, including many Democrats. Pence was viewed as the winner. Sadly, unfortunately, Pence also had to interrupt. He had to interrupt to keep the other guy from interrupting him. He would never have gotten a word in edgewise if he hadn't. So Pence won despite the odds, but oh, what a pathetic evening. Kane barks out a litany of accusations against Trump, even when it isn't his turn. Early on in the debate, and the moderator doesn't say a word, not one word. Pence finally gets to talk about Hillary's email, and the moderator cuts him off immediately because it's time to move on. You see, the issues she wants to discuss are more important than any point the candidate wants to make. But if you think the only media working against Trump is the news media, think again. The Star Trek production team is encouraging its fans not to vote for Donald Trump. Apparently, Trump is not in line with the values of Star Trek. Now, I've been watching Star Trek for many years. I was not aware that lying criminal candidates who would end our republic with her Supreme Court picks were in line with Star Trek values. Hey, Trekkies, before taking your talking points from media agencies like NBC News, you might want to remember that the idiotic NBC network was responsible for canceling the original Star Trek. It went down in history as the stupidest thing NBC had ever done. Since then, they have not yet continued to impress anybody with their intelligence. More stranger than fiction news stories, Bill Clinton talks about the failure of Obamacare. Saints preserve us. I guess even a Clinton accidentally speaks the truth once in a while. Give a monkey a typewriter, sooner or later he types a word. Well, if you'd like to weigh in on any of this, you can reach me on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel.net. Concerning my comparison of the way a politician talks to the way a politician acts, there was close to like 70 likes on Facebook on my last count. Here are a few comments. Dave says, it's not so much the PC culture as it is a worldview that is radically opposed to what is good and virtuous. And then he quotes from Isaiah chapter 5, or he gives a reference to Isaiah chapter 5. Stephanie says, I am one who is voting for Trump. I wish others understood what is at stake. I am praying. Craig says, I heard an interview with Hillary off air. Wow, I have never heard anything like that from a female or a male, for that matter. Melinda says, right on the money, Bob. I like Trump. He is a straight shooter, and I don't need fluffy political jargon. Just get the job done. I feel he will save America. Well, I hope you're right, Melinda. I'm inclined to think that with the kinds of rabbit trails our PC country focuses on, the election goes to Hillary, barring a miracle. Now, I do believe in miracles, but make no mistake, that is exactly what it will take. Concerning last week's debate, Scott says, I was just about to post the exact same thing when your post popped up. I totally agree. This moderator is weak. Wayne says, the moderator is so in the tank for Kane. Chuck says, I'm greatly concerned for our nation. The media is so biased. The issues are blurred. We're like a frog that is adjusting to the water temperature getting hotter, and we are not even aware of it. Yes, I've used that analogy many times myself, Chuck, that of boiling the frog slowly. It is what's happened to our country. Sandy says, society as a whole has declined into so much rudeness and selfishness. The days of hearty debate and civil discourse are long gone.
Now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
We'll be right back.
Back to 1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. I'm reading some comments regarding my comments about last week's vice presidential debate, even as this week's debate's going on, even as I'm on the air. Bill says, Kane interrupted Pence, it seemed, every time he opened his mouth, not presenting many new arguments, but harping on one issue, which Pence deflected multiple times, whereas Kane wouldn't answer questions like the Clinton Family Fund, which foreign governments paid millions of dollars in order to take a meeting with Hillary, benefiting the family even when it is and was illegal for the practice prohibiting foreign governments from doing exactly that. The American people don't deserve such a corrupt president that would be Hillary. If she by some miracle does win, we must all pray for our country and the carnage that she will visit on our country. Steve says, Pence beat Kane hands down. Pence is the ticket. Kane was a blowhard and a jerk. Renee says, what, a biased moderator? Say it ain't so. Brian says, I have not heard anyone mention which, if these two, would you want as president? Seems obvious to me. Richard says, Kane reminds me of a cartoon character. He's not real. Lori says, it's obvious who controls the media and who controls the election. Regarding what I said about the hurricane and global warming, Peter says the frustrating part is just a little critical thinking debunks all of it. When I was attending public school in the 80s and 90s, we were spoon-fed all this garbage, global warming, food supply will run out, oil supply running out, etc. Yet all estimates have to be reestimated when we fail to run out. They have about as much credibility as groups that predict the end of the world. When the movie Inconvenient Truth came out, Gore predicted Katrina hurricanes would only get worse, yet we ended up in a decade-plus long lull to hit Florida. Okay, well, today I'm going to conclude a series that I began 2 weeks ago. If God is a loving God, why is there pain and suffering in the world? If you missed those first two, you can still find them on my website, bobsiegel.net. And I was talking about the book of Job as we got to the end of last week's program. And Job's a very interesting book. For those who like to say that the Bible's overly simplistic, everything's black and white, Job was a book that showed the gray areas. Because Job came out and said, what happened? And the book Ecclesiastes does this too. It says, what happens when righteous people suffer and evil people prosper? Life doesn't always go the way we expect. And in the book of Job was going through these trials and he had no idea why they were going on. And at the end, he actually had an audience with God. He got to do what we've dreamed about, ask God why he was going through what he was going through. And it was very anticlimactic because God did not answer the question. God said, I'm God, you're man, that's my answer. That didn't mean that there wasn't a reason Job suffered. There was a reason, and we, the readers, saw the reason. We saw behind the curtain that's seen at the beginning that there were certain things that Satan was going to do to Job that Job did not deserve, and God was going to allow them to test Job's faith. But what I find interesting is God never revealed that to Job. If he did, it would have been much later in life. If he did, that revelation was not recorded in the book of Job. Job's in heaven now. He probably knows now. Is the message of the book of Job that there is no reason when we go through suffering? No. But the message of the book of Job is that we won't always know the reason. And I think there could be real peace in that. I remember one summer, it was my first summer going out to seminary. I went to seminary in the summertime. Did it all through summer school because they were giving me activity units for my work at universities during the corresponding year, 2 years at Arizona State, 2 years at UC Santa Barbara. And boy, there was one summer where everything that could go wrong went wrong. We had been in a car accident. I had been overpaid. I had gotten a bigger bank draft refund from the IRS than I was supposed to get. After I spent it, they notified me, said they made a mistake, and they wanted it back. I was told I owed $400. $400 was a lot more money in the 70s, by the way. That was almost like what $4,000 might be today. I was told I owed that money because I wasn't insured in my car accident. I was insured with my car. Everything that could go wrong went wrong. But on top of that, I was always analyzing everything and saying, God, what did I do wrong? God, what are you trying to tell me? And my friends, my point is this. When you're going through a trial, isn't it trying enough that you have to put this burden on yourself to figure everything out? Now, I mentioned last week that sometimes there is something God wants to get our attention about. But in those times, it's obvious. When God told Jonah to go to Nineveh and Jonah went as far the opposite direction as he could, God got Jonah's attention with a big sea storm. When the Apostle Paul had his thorn in the flesh, some kind of physical ailment, God revealed to him, you were getting so many revelations from me. You were having so many ecstatic spiritual experiences from me, I didn't want you to get a swelled head. If God has a reason, he'll tell you. If it's because you're sinning, you know you're sinning. It's obvious. If you don't know why you're suffering, well, yes, there's still a reason, but you don't necessarily have to know what it is. Now, I ended last week by talking, or beginning to talk, about one of my college summer school professors who was an Old Testament professor. And it was interesting because of books like Job and Ecclesiastes, which are found in the Old Testament, the Old Testament professors usually understand and relate and sympathize to this phenomena more than the New Testament professors, which love to have a happy theology and answer for everything. And this professor, his name was Marv Rozelle, brilliant, brilliant man, kind man. He told a story of a time where a couple of his students recently married. They were renting a house and the plumbing backed up and there was a big cesspool in their basement. This was Denver, Colorado. So they came out to Professor Rozelle's visiting apartment and they asked him his opinion of this. And they said, what do you think God is trying to tell us? And he hesitated and he said, well, I think God's trying to tell you to go home and start cleaning out your cesspool. You see, I think there's real wisdom in that there can be peace in not knowing the answer to everything. But we do know this, your trial sooner or later will end. Now, are there trials so horrible that they won't end till the next life? Yes, that's true. And if we really believe in the next life, and if we really take it seriously, and there's every reason to, in as much as it's a historical fact that Jesus rose from the dead, then that should be soothing too. But a lot of times the smaller things we go through in this life, they are going to end. I remember one time, that this was after I had only been in full-time ministry 1 year. I was 1 year out of college. I did my first missionary tour at Arizona State University, came back to San Jose for a combination of Christmas vacation. My in-laws lived there. But I was also going to speak in a few churches, and I got sick. Not critically sick, but very inconveniently sick. As inconvenient as Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth, I had the sore throat, swollen gland, the whole works. We'll be right back. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Bob Siegel not only writes fiction, but nonfiction as well. Over the years, Bob has received wonderful comments about his book on Christian apologetics entitled, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... Many have put this book in the hands of their seeking, unbelieving friends, and the book takes it from there. This is because the book has a rhetorical skeptic that argues with Bob about the harder, less frequently discussed questions. As a result, the reader is immediately aware that they are reading from an author who relates to them. The moment they find themselves questioning something they see, their very question appears in the text. Every question in this book was one that was personally put to Bob during his many years of speaking on college campuses. I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
through a lot of trials in life. I remember when I was home from my first semester as a full-time minister, full-time missionary at Arizona State University back in San Jose, slated to speak in some churches to raise support, and I got sick. Sore throats, swollen glands, upset stomach, Pepto-Bismol, the whole works. And I remember at first being very disappointed in God and saying, God, why did you allow this to happen to me? As if the whole world was going to stop if I wasn't well enough to go and speak in churches, as if that was really that important. And then I remembered something that I had once observed in the Old Testament, that the Old Testament portrayed God as a knight in shining armor who delivered us from our trials. But we as theologians sometimes try to analyze why we're in the trial in the first place. It's a matter of perspective. You heard of the old story that the pessimist sees the glass of water as half empty, and the optimist sees it as half full. Look, for example, the story of Joseph. Joseph was beaten up by his brothers, sold into slavery, accused of adultery falsely, ended up going to prison, was there for 2 years. But in time, he was delivered. He was released. He was by interpreting the Pharaoh's dream, he was made second in command of all of Egypt. And his brothers, the very brothers that beat him, came back and had to buy grain from him. They were very penitent. They all lived happily ever after. But if somebody wanted to, they could say, okay, well, that's wonderful that God delivered Joseph. But if God was such a loving God, why was Joseph made a prisoner in Egypt in the first place? King David, before he became king, was being persecuted by Israel's previous and first king, King Saul. God delivered David. And finally, King Saul was defeated and David became king. But they could say, well, yeah, but why did David go through that in the first place? You know, one of the ultimate examples is Jesus' followers. They're following this guy around who's going to be their Messiah, who's going to be their king. And then the day comes when Jesus is executed and everything's over. But after the execution comes what? A few days later, the resurrection. That's the biblical principle, life, death, resurrection. Or the way I've heard it related, not just to physical death, but the death and resurrection of our plans and hopes and dreams. Birth of a vision from God, and then death of the vision, but then later on, supernatural fulfillment of the vision. Jesus said once, unless a seed dies, it can't become a plant. That's kind of interesting. Technically, a seed doesn't die, but he's making this point that when a seed becomes a plant, it's not a seed anymore. So in a way, it's like the seed died because it no longer exists as a seed. And he was making the analogy to our resurrection in life. When we go through trials, the trial will eventually end. And when I remembered that and gave myself comfort in that this time back in San Jose, my whole attitude changed. I said, okay, God, I could sit here and wallow in this and analyze this and say, why are you allowing me to have this sore throat? Why did you allow me to get sick? But instead, I'm going to look at you the way the writers of the Bible looked at you. I'm going through a trial. You're going to be the knight in shining armor. You're going to rescue me. Boy, did he ever. I went to the doctor. The doctor did not charge me for the call. That's got to be the greatest miracle since the parting of the Red Sea. And the doctor wrote me the prescription for an antibiotic called tetracycline. So I went to the druggist, and the druggist looks at me, and he looks at the prescription. He sees my address. He sees that I'm here from Arizona. He made a little good-natured joke. He said, Bob, did you come all the way out here from Arizona just to get sick? And I said, well, no, I'm actually a missionary, and I'm home on furlough. And I love telling people that I'm a missionary or minister because I love watching their reaction. People are so icky around ministers. They don't know how to behave around a minister. They don't think ministers can talk about anything but God. So I said this, and boy, you should have seen his reaction. He said, missionary, minister. Oh, well, you guys do great work. Great work. I don't go to church myself, but I love the forest, and God made the forest. And you want to just go, hey, it's all right. Don't worry about it. And then he turns to me and he says, I'll tell you what, Bob, I'm not even going to charge you for this prescription. This will be a Christmas gift for you. I wasn't charged for the doctor call. I wasn't charged for the prescription. The whole disease was on the Lord. In these days of inflation, it's nice to know you can get sick for free. So God did become like a knight in shining armor. Now, what was funny is that was such a fun story that I actually incorporated it. As it happened, I recovered in time and I did speak in churches. And what I spoke about was the question of suffering. What I spoke about is what I've been speaking to you about for the last couple of weeks. I put together a sermon on suffering. I call it my suffering sermon. And since this is something that everybody thinks about and everybody wonders about, it was very well received. Well, when I got back to Arizona, there were several mission conferences I was going to be a part of, and I'd never had so many speaking engagements at churches lined up in my life. Guess what I decided to speak about? When you're a guest speaker, you have the luxury of speaking about the same thing every time. The poor pastor who's pastoring every Sunday has to come up with something new. We guest speakers have it easy. So I came up with this sermon about suffering, and I included that illustration that I just shared with you about the sore throat and the free doctor visit and the free prescription. And I done this five or six times when I was asked by some students to come and speak at their retreat. Now, this is in the winter in Arizona. Now, usually there's no such thing as winter in Arizona, if you're living in Tempe where I live. But this was going to be up in a little town called Globe. That was up in the mountains. And the mountains in Arizona have snow. The mountains in Arizona have real winters. These students invited me to come on their retreat and speak. So I said to myself, I know what I'll do this weekend. I'll do my suffering sermon. Well, God had a better idea. He said, I'll tell you what, Bob, you've been getting an awful lot of mileage out of this sermon. How about if you experience some suffering this weekend instead? And the students can see your great mature attitude about the suffering, and they can learn from that. God had a whole different plan than I did. We were caravanning. I was following one student driving. Another student driving was following me. All of a sudden, a deer ran into the middle of the road, and he slammed on his brakes. Now, you're not supposed to slam your brakes on the snow. He slammed brakes on. I went right into him. The guy behind went right into me. I was driving a Volkswagen Bug, a 1968 Volkswagen Bug that I had bought when it was 10 years old, but I had bought it rebuilt. It had new engine. It had a new clutch. It had new bodywork, new brakes, new tires. I don't think there was anything of the original car there. Volkswagen Bugs are great cars, but they're put together with a rubber band. I'll tell you how I experienced this retreat when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Jesus said that his people should be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Some churches take that mandate seriously, others sadly do not. I am happy to announce that there are many good, serious churches in San Diego, and Skyline is certainly one of them. Outreaches to the community and the world at large are carried on by our missionary family. Their ministries to the poor, the shut-ins, and the emotionally scarred. There are groups and classes for all ages, from children to middle school to high school, college, young adult, and senior citizen. Skyline is also on the cutting edge of today's social issues. We mobilize people and help them to be a better voice for the changing culture around us.
Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m.
Back to our program. So I'm on this retreat and I get into an accident. And what I was going to talk about was enduring during trials and suffering on the retreat. Now, I got to be honest with you, had it just been my wife and I in the car and I didn't know the people that actually plowed into me and I plowed into, I would have just lost it. I'll just be honest. I would have said, Lane, brain pinheaded idiot, stopping, slamming on his brake. But I couldn't do that. You see, I was the guest speaker on the retreat. Now, nobody was hurt, fortunately. I got out of the car. The students were very apologetic. I said, well, it looks like we had an accident here. Well, it's okay. God's in control. God's on his throne. God's going to take care of everything. It was all an act. I didn't feel that way for a second, but I made a very interesting discovery that day. Acting is action. If we put our feelings subservient to how we act, the feelings change, especially when we have the Spirit of God living in us. It says in Philippians, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God at work in you to work and to will for his good pleasure. If God is at work in you to work, that means God's giving you the power and ability to obey him. If he's at work in you to will, that means he's actually affecting your desires. That can only happen from within, but we put our actions first. When Peter and the other disciples saw Jesus walking on the water, Peter said, Lord, allow me to walk on the water. Jesus said, go ahead. Now, is Peter, as a human being, capable of walking on water? The surfing wasn't even invented yet in those days. Peter couldn't have even surfed, let alone walk on the water without a board. But he was. How? Because God was miraculously sustaining him. But from Peter's point of view, he really did take the first foot out of the boat and put one foot another under the water, and he really did walk. God met him halfway. When the Israelites were brought to the Promised Land, we read a lot, you know, we're all familiar with the parting of the Red Sea. What we don't hear as much about is the parting of the waters of Jericho, or not actually parted, but God told the Israelites he was going to stop the water. This is under the leadership of Joshua. He was going to stop the water and they could walk across the riverbank. But what was interesting is, unlike the Red Sea where the water parted first, Joshua had the people step into the water while the water was still flowing, and as they stepped in, it stopped. See, it works that way with God. We ignore how we feel, and we act the way we should, and when that happens, the Holy Spirit changes our feelings. By the end of that weekend, very soon into that weekend, I wasn't just pretending that I wasn't bothered. I wasn't just pretending that I believed God was going to make something good come out of it. I really believed it, and the students were blown away. About a year later, I spoke at a Bible college, and a lot of these students were there, and they came up to me and they said, when you had that great attitude and said God was going to make something wonderful, even out of your car accident, they said, we thought you were out of your mind, and yet he did. Now, what's interesting, I mentioned that this was a rebuilt 68 Volkswagen Bug. Now, that means that insurance companies, being the dear sweet things that they are, all they have to do is go by what they call the Blue Book price. They could just say, and they could have said in those days, a 1968 Bug's worth $400. We're going to give you $400. And even then, they would own the car. The idea that they were going to rebuild it and make it as new as it was when I bought it, because like I said, it was so rebuilt, it was like a brand new car. In fact, I was even making payments on it. It was such a nice, clean, rebuilt car. I actually bought it with a loan. I was making payments. But all they had to do was total the car, saying that it's not worth it. The amount of money that we would put in would far exceed what a 1968 is worth. And I was ready for a fight. I was ready to go in with papers and paperwork and show them that this was a rebuilt car. Boy, the back fender, the back and the front light, they were both out, taillight out, headlights out. I was pulled over twice on the way home by police officers. Are you the owner of this vehicle? May I see your license and registration? A couple days later, I go to the insurance adjuster, ready for a fight on my hands. Fortunately, God got there before I did. I walk in, first words out of my mouth, I have a totaled car. The guy just looks at me, leans over the counter, goes, totaled car? Oh, no, I don't want to total another car. I just total a guy's car. I hate doing that to people. I tell you what, I'm going to save your car for you. He says this before I even had a chance to defend myself one inch. He gets out some paper. He says, I'm going to send you to my friend, Don. Don at the Tempe Body Shop, very close by. He writes a note. Dear Don, work this out. Do not total. So I go to Don at the Tempe Body Shop. Don says, Bob, let me ask you a question. Would you be willing to satisfy yourself with a combination of new and used parts? If you do, he says, I can do $900 worth of fixing, $900 worth of damage on this, and your insurance company will pay for it. Again, we're talking about the 1970s, folks. $900 was a whole lot more money. And I said, yeah, I could do that. He says, and it will only cost you, your deductible will be $150. Now, again, that was more money in those days than it is today. And yet even then, $150, it certainly seemed affordable to him. And if I had a little more money in my pocket, it would have seemed a little affordable to me. I said, you know what? That's very generous of you. And I really appreciate it. I said, actually, though, I don't even have $150. Would you settle for me paying you $50 a month? And I'll pay that over the next 3 months. He says, no, I can't do that. But I'll tell you what. I'll only charge you $50. So I only paid $50. It gets even better. A week later, we get a letter from my grandmother-in-law, avid atheist, hates religion. She says, here you got into an accident. I'm sure this won't help much, but I wanted to contribute a little bit. And there was a check for $50. The car looked better when it got out of the shop than it had looked before. In fact, they even took out this dent that a kid had made with his baseball before I was in the car accident. The trials eventually. And now I did mention, though, that obviously some of you are sitting there thinking, Bob, you're talking about a sore throat. You're talking about an automobile accident. There are more serious things that go on in life. There are life and death things. You're right. So let me conclude this part of our show with a life and death story. I had a good friend when I was doing my 5-year ministry at UC Santa Barbara, which I did after Arizona. His name was Nathan. Now, Nathan was a dwarf. He was also confined to a wheelchair his entire life, could not walk. Nice guy, brilliant guy. Nathan came to our meetings for about a year before he gave his life to Christ. And he hesitated for very understandable reasons, because he said to himself, and I learned all this later, because after he became a Christian, I discipled Nathan, became good friends with him, learned a lot about him. So he started cluing me in on what his train of thought had been when he was visiting our meetings. And he was thinking, if I were to take this seriously, they're saying I'm going to someday live forever, not in a wheelchair. I'm going to be a full, tall size. I'm going to be able to walk. And I'm never going to get sick again. And I'm going to live that way for all of eternity. It sounded too good to be true. He was afraid it was too good to be true. Nathan's greatest fear was giving his life to Christ, only to then get disillusioned and find out that it wasn't true. And that's why he hesitated. But he finally did give his life to Christ. Brilliant guy. He actually became one of our small group student leaders. Now, I was in Santa Barbara for 5 years. It was during right around the beginning of my second year that I met Nathan, so I knew him for 4 years. Then I came to start a church out at UC San Diego. I was not here in San Diego for a very long time when one of my alumni students called me and said that Nate was in the hospital. His bones were so fragile and weak, always with his condition, that when he got sick, it was always critical. He had come down with pneumonia, and the doctors had already told his parents that he wasn't going to make it. I went down to the hospital. The hospital said they never saw so many people at one time. There'd be 30 students out in the hallway praying for Nate. And of course, when you get a bunch of students together and a bunch of Christians, you have the ones that are praying for God's will, and then you have the ones that are saying, if we just name it and claim it and lay hands on him, God will heal him. Well, we actually had a woman in our group named Miko. She went to one of those name it, claim it charismatic churches. Her pastor, who had never met Nathan, told Miko, I got a vision, and I saw Jesus healing Nathan. So Miko was excited. Nathan's going to be healed. And other people would scold us. I remember one time in the middle of a prayer meeting, people said, how many of you believe he can really get healed? If you don't have faith, I don't think you should even be praying. We'll be right back. Buying a home? Selling a home? It goes without saying that you need somebody experienced and skilled, but you also need a realtor you can trust, a man who will look out for your interests as if they were his own. This is Bob Siegel, here to steer you the right direction with just two words, Fred Felduti. Fred works with Realty Executives All Area, a company that has sold thousands of homes locally since 1994. Putting your home up for sale or selling a home can be stressful, filled with decisions you never anticipated. So put your mind at ease and call Fred Felduti. He sold my home for me at top price. Every step along the way, I benefited from his wisdom and a very generous usage of his time. By the way, Fred Falduti received the Executive of the Year Award for 2014. What? You say that was a couple of years ago? Listen, wise guy, do you want to mark the calendar or do you want somebody to sell your home for you? Whether buying or selling, the man you want is Fred Falduti with Realty Executives All Area, 619-401-2150. That's 619-401-2150 or fredfalduti.com.
Bob Siegel's new novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, is available. What better gift can parents or grandparents offer to their children than a story which promotes Judeo-Christian values? But don't look for anybody standing on a soapbox. Instead, the message is presented through an exciting, humorous, entertaining fantasy adventure with a talking cat and a magic ornament that grants wishes, but only at the expense of causing a lot of trouble. By the way, adults have loved this book as much as kids, so it will actually make a great Christmas gift for anyone you know. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to our program. So my friend Nathan, a dwarf and a cripple all his life, and he's now dying of pneumonia. And the doctors told his parents he wouldn't even make it through the night. So I left San Diego, went out to visit him. When Nate saw me, and every time I went into the room, he would just really perk up. And, you know, he was looking to me as his spiritual mentor. And I remember several times he'd just grab my hand. He'd say, Bob, I want to get well. I want to get well. Now, I wasn't into this name it, claim it stuff. Do I believe God can heal people? Yes, and I've seen it. I've witnessed these miracles. I also know that sometimes it's our time to go. I did not know which it would be. I know we had students there that were just claiming this, and it was a problem because if Nate were to die, then their faith could become very disillusioned. Some were praying that God's will be done. Others were just petitioning God and saying, we know you'll do your will, but you've invited us to tell you what our will is. Our will is that Nathan be healed. I was praying for Nathan's healing. But when Nathan himself, I could tell that he was hoping I'd have some special gift of healing, maybe because of our past relationship with me being a spiritual mentor. And I said, Nathan, God will heal you. And he's going to do it in one of two ways. Either you'll get better now and continue to live here on earth, or you'll be taken to heaven and you'll resurrect. But very soon, either way, you're going to be healed. Well, he did die, and I was in the room with him when he died, and his parents were in the room with him when he died. I guarantee you there is no sadder sight on earth than seeing two parents hovering over their son, crying, Nathan, love of our life, light of our life. And of course, a lot of our students were very disillusioned. Until we learned about some other things that had happened. I had a friend named John. Now, he was not at the hospital. He knew about the situation when Nathan was praying. In the middle of the night, he was suddenly awakened. I don't remember what the exact time was, but let's say it was like 3:15. He was awakened. He felt it was God that woke him up. He looked at the time, and he said something just happened. Either Nathan was healed or Nathan just died, but God just told me something. Well, we compared the times. That was the exact moment Nathan had died. Now, why was that comforting? Because it showed that God was still in control. Everybody dies at some time, unless you're those people that are going to get raptured before the second coming of Christ, and we don't know when that's going to be. Everybody's going to pass from this life into the next life. It's always sad. You're always leaving people behind that wish it hadn't happened. That's what happens. That's our joint heritage as human beings. Death doesn't mean God isn't on his throne. Well, what about Miko and her pastor, who had told her that he saw a vision of Jesus healing Nathan? Remember, I told you he had never met Nathan. Miko was very concerned about this, and so she went back, and without giving him any details, she said, could you tell me in more detail, you said you saw a vision of Jesus healing Nathan. Exactly what did you see? She said, I saw a midget in his bed. I saw Jesus walk up to his bed, stretch out his arms and legs, turning him to normal size. I know that these days it's not even politically correct to talk this way, but I'm just relating the story as he said it. Jesus stretched out his arms and legs, made him normal size, picked him up in his arms, and carried him away. Now, okay, ladies and gentlemen, this guy did not know that Nathan was a dwarf. He didn't know that. But he saw that in the vision. What he mistakenly interpreted and concluded as Jesus healing Nathan was actually a beautiful picture of Jesus taking Nathan into heaven, where, as I told Nathan, as the Bible tells Nathan and all of us, he would be resurrected from the dead. So what happened to Nathan? Jesus Christ came to his bedside, picked him up, stretched out his arms and legs, and carried him away. God is on his throne. And so even a trial like that, whether it ends in heaven, whether it ends in earth, your trial will end. And I started this by reading some scriptures from Peter last week about suffering. Here's 1 Peter 5:10. It says it all. And the God of all grace, who called you to his eternal glory in Christ, after you have suffered a little while, will himself restore you and make you strong, firm, and steadfast. Well, we have a few minutes left in today's program, so I'm going to talk to you a little bit about a subject that came up in my Sunday school class this morning. And of course, we'll just be able to start it, and then we'll have to continue this in a future show. And it's on the question of judging. Now, I've done a lot of debates and interactions with unbelievers and skeptics and people who like to slam the Bible. Did you know that there's a very popular verse with Bible skeptics or people that are very anti-Christian? It's the verse that says, "Judge not, lest you be judged." It's their favorite verse. They love it. They have no idea where it's actually found in Scripture. They have no idea what the context is. They take it out of context all the time, but they love quoting it. And they're usually quoting it to a Christian who's sharing the gospel, because part of the gospel is you'll be forgiven of your sins, but you have to repent. So they're insulted that somebody would say we have to repent. Some of them are insulted to say that there's even such a thing as sin. We're in an age of moral relativism, and who are we to judge another person? And then, of course, part of the gospel is also that Jesus Christ is the only way to God. He's the only true God. So it sounds like you're being judgmental of other religions. So in all kinds of counts, a Christian evangelist, or maybe not even a Christian evangelist, just a Christian sharing their faith with a friend, comes across as making a judgment. And technically, that is a judgment. We're saying sin is sin. We're saying repent. That is a judgment. He's saying, so Jesus said, judge not lest you be judged, as if Jesus is commanding us not to share our faith. Here's the verse. It's found in Matthew 7, verses 1 through 5. It was part of Jesus' very first recorded sermon, the Sermon on the Mount. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there's a plank in your own eye, you hypocrite? First take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Okay, we're running out of time. I'll pursue this more later. But ladies and gentlemen, he's not saying that you can't judge. He's saying you can't judge others for their sin if you haven't first judged yourself for your sin. Is he saying you can't take a splinter out of your brother's eye? No. Take out the plank from your own eye, then you will see clearly to remove the splinter from your brother's eye. We'll see you next week.
Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170, The Answer, is sponsored by Bob Siegel.